Gonna rock the shade. Gonna scream my name. Make you shout now, honey. Gonna make you shout.
Whether you're an independent artist or a fan that loves them, MakingAScene.org is the place for you. For the music fan, we bring you in-depth interviews and CD reviews from artists who are on the cutting edge of original music. For the independent artist, we bring you articles on music business, recording techniques, gear reviews, and interviews with industry professionals that give you real-world information to help you negotiate the new realities in the music industry and give you the tools you need to move your career to the next level. We bring you new content every day. MakingAScene.org is the number one resource for the independent artists and the fans that love them. Head on over and become part of the indie revolution.
Gonna scream my name. Make you shout now, honey. Gonna make you shout.
Thank you. of my head.
And that was Joel Dupuy from his brand new release. And we got Joel on the line right now. Hey, Joel, how you doing?
Hey, Rich, not too shabby. How you keeping?
I'm keeping well. Now, this is the first time you've been on our show, and we always start off by giving the fans the opportunity to get to know you, not only as an artist, but also as a person. And the best way to do that is through your journey, how you got to where you are today. So give us the story of Joel Dupuy.
Sure thing. Well, you know, I'm at the ripe old age of 23 right about now, but first time I ever got a guitar in my hands was my ninth Christmas. But back then I figured, would I rather get sore fingers or should I play video games? So I let her sit around for a while. Then I didn't start picking it up until I was about 13 years old. And then I started playing, you know, learning a chord here, learning a chord there. But I had this habit. Every morning before school, I'd go over to my friend's house. And we would always walk to school. But before he walked to school, he had this game. It was a Guitar Hero game. And I was like, hey, I know this song. Hey, I know this song. And then I started putting two and two together. And I'd say, you know what, wouldn't it be really cool if I started playing these songs on my Guitar Hero? And it was a $25 Walmart special guitar. I mean, I would cut my hand on these frets. It was the worst thing ever. But you know what? It builds character. I even tried to get out of it by telling my mom that it was a left-handed guitar. And and she believed it, but she said, figure it out, you know. So for the past 8 or 9 years, she's been telling everybody that I started on a left-handed guitar. She didn't change the story until I got to tell her. But anyhow, started picking to the songs that I was playing on my video games there. And, I started taking lessons and started clicking a little more and a little more. And then that's right around the time where my dad turned me on to Stevie Ray Vaughan. And I tell you what, the first song, I still remember the first song I heard from him. It was Little Wing. It was his version of Little Wing. And I remember I ran to school the next day and I was like, told my best friend, I said, hey man, you got to hear this. You got to hear this guitar solo. And he asked me where the guitar solo was. I said, it's the whole song. You got to listen to it. And I tell you what, man, once I heard that version of Little Wing by Stevie Ray Vaughan, oh my God, I was hooked on the blues. I got into B.B. King, Freddie King, Albert King. I got into, if there was blues, if there was strings, I got into it. I even got into some folk stuff, man. I got into some Jim Croce and Cat Stevens.
Okay.
But my main background was all that old school blues. I listened to Stevie and I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. And then my dad said, yeah, well, he sounds like Albert King and Buddy Guy. And so from there I started finding my players that I really liked. And then I looked, okay, where'd they get it from? And then I'd be locked in my room trying to pick away, figure out what they would do. And I couldn't read music and I still can't read music. And I hadn't quite figured out that you could look stuff up on YouTube, so I was doing it the old school way. I was putting the records on, CDs. I didn't have a record player back then, but I was playing the CDs, and I was listening, and I was trying to figure out what they were playing. And it was pretty cool, man. It built a lot of character, and then I'd do my best that I could with it, and then I'd take it to my guitar teacher, and then we work out the kinks there. It was just a lot of that, and then, of course, COVID hit, and that totally stopped everything. Mm-hmm. But once COVID wrapped up, or near the end of it, I was like, you know what, let's get a little serious about this. Let's put a good band together here. And I'd played a couple of shows at that point in time, but I got a really great drummer and a really great bass player together, who are the fellas that are on my album there. And we just started practicing, started woodshedding. And then our first gig out of COVID was up here at the King Cardin Lighthouse Blues Festival, which has some amazing, amazing, amazing acts. And actually, to circle around, King Cardin was the first place that I ever got a paid gig and played. There's a local music club in town, London Music Club. and they would have amazing international artists come. It was just a little, very small, like 100 people room. But they had all these great blues folk come in on Thursdays. And this one time, a fellow by the name of Scott Holt come in.
Oh, I know Scott.
Oh, my goodness. I was just blown away. I sat front row. I had my mom and my dad there. And I was just washing his fingers the whole night. And Scott, man, he toured with Buddy Guy for a little while. And I'm sure he picked up this trick from him. Or he'd walk around with his wireless guitar, and he'd see all the pretty girls, and he'd put the guitar in their lap, and they'd bang away on it, and and then he walked over to me, and, I had long hair at the time. I didn't have any peach fuzz or any beard or nothing, so I don't know if he knew I was a guitar player, he thought I was just a chick in the front row, but he looks at me, puts the guitar right in my lap. I'm sitting down, and I'm playing it. And then my mom's right beside me, and she yells at me, "Joel, stand up." And I didn't hear what she said at the time, but, you know, when your mom's right beside you and she yells at you, I don't know what your first reaction is, but mine is to stand right up right as quick as you can.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I'm playing. She points me to the stage. I get up on that stage. I pick away. I finish the solo. And then after that night, I ran into the old couple, Rick and Marilyn Clark, that run that blues festival. They gave me my high school band a chance, and ever since then I've been playing. That was my first ever live show, and it was cool because this year we were on the main stage in King Carden, and it's where so many of my musical memories have come from. I've met many musicians. I met I met Ghost Town Blues Band in out of Memphis, Tennessee, and in King Carden, and I just was fortunate to be their guitar player on tour last year across Canada, Southern Ontario and Quebec.
Nice.
So
okay.
It's pretty cool, man. Yeah.
Well,
so that's a little bit about me.
All right. Well, you know, I actually know Scott Holt. I've spent many of a gig with him, and he's a cool guy and very generous with the stage. So I could see that happening. Now,
yeah, it was pretty cool. Every time he come back after that, he always got me up playing every time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you're a crowd favorite, so, yeah, get you up. Get the youngins up there. Now,
yes, sir.
Let's talk a little bit about this new release. Every release has a inspiration or something that drives it into existence. What was the driving force on this?
Yeah, well, I had a couple of songs together here and there, you know, nothing too crazy. I had a couple of good ones. I had a couple good ones and a lot of bad ones. But I have a lot of friends in the music industry. I'm very fortunate that I've met a lot of good folks that I can call friends. And they're like, "Man, you got to get something out there." And I was like, "You know what? Let me just get together with the guys. Let's book some studio time. Let's see if we can't come up with something here." And we had, I think, about 4 or 5 songs at the start of the project. We're like, "Let's book some studio time here," and then about 7 or 8 months later, "Let's book another session." Gives us plenty of time to write and iron out the kinks and test stuff out at shows. And so we went into that that first session. We had 5 songs. It came out great. We're like, "Awesome. Oh, frick, where do we go now? We want 10 songs. I got to write a whole other 5 songs." And we didn't know what the album was going to be called at that point. We didn't. At that point, it was just Project A1, you know. And I started trying to figure out, okay, well, maybe I should go the Stevie Ray Vaughan route. You know, he named his first album after one of the songs. Let's try doing that. And the songs that I had at the time, I was like, well, I was really thinking about graphics for the album cover. And I'm like, you know, like, well, I can't really do anything about this or that. And then I ended up writing a slower song of mine that's on the album called Wake Up. And I'm like, you know, that's a good name. I might be able to do that. That'd look all right on a t-shirt. So the first draft of the album was actually originally called Wake Up. And then outside of playing music, I also do front of house sound at a hall in town. And I ran into a fella by the name of Steve Pulse. He's out of Nashville. And I was talking to him, and he said, "Back in the day, I used to play in a country band." And he said, we would challenge each other. We would give each other one word. And if you couldn't write a song around that word in 24 hours, you were out of the band. So I went home after that, and I talked to my dad. I said, "Dad, give me a word." No context. I said, Dad, give me a word. And he looked at me, said, steel. I says, S-T-E-E-L or S-T-E-A-L? He says, whatever you figure. I said, all right. So I went up to my room, and I'm like, okay, 24 hours. Can I write a song in 24 hours? And I ended up writing Very Best Fool out of that one. And the word steel comes up once in the song. It comes up once on the entire album. But you know what? It's there, damn it.
That's right.
And mission accomplished. And I thought, Very Best Fool, yeah, that's cool. And when I finished up writing the chorus, I'm like, well, that almost reminds me of like a Colin James thing almost, who's a great Canadian musician. And so once I got that, I was like, man, that's a good title. And I tell you what, after you hear that song, if that song doesn't make you want to buy a Ram 1500, I don't know what will. You know, but it's a nice driving song. And so basically, once I got that, I was like, yeah, we got a name. We got some songs. Let's finish up this out. Let's finish up these other couple songs. Let's iron them out. And they went over great with the crowd. And I tell you what, from what we wrote to what ended up on the album, I'm glad we booked that time pretty far apart, because it's amazing how the songs will morph. Because the way that we write them is I've always written all the words. I've always written all of the melody. And then I bring it to the fellas. I'm like, okay, guys, let's put some bass. Let's put some drums on it. And I'm not one of those guys that's like, nope, this is how it's got to be. I'm like, cool. This is how it's going to look right now. What ideas do you have? I'm the most collaborative guy. I want to hear everybody's ideas, because, you know, you can't think of everything. And these guys, they got such great ideas. And so that's basically how we would write songs. And I'd sit in my room, I'd come up with the basics of it. And then we'd come together as a band, put some stops here, some starts here. Put a little bit of a change up here, and that's how the whole album kind of went, you know.
Okay. Now, you know, you mentioned about, you know, these different sessions that you had. You know, every artist has their way of working in a studio, and that's an art form in itself. What is your process when you get in the studio that kind of helps you get what you're looking for sound wise, and even arrangement of the song?
Yeah, so like I said, when we went into that first session, we had a pretty solid four or five songs, and we were pretty familiar with them. There were songs that we've been playing for a while, and so we get in the room and we're like, all right, you know, I've done some work in some bigger studios and some smaller studios, and I kind of feel out what I like, and I'm like, let's just do this live off the floor. Everybody's in the room. We got drummer in the room. Everyone can make eye contact, because the way I play music, both live and in rehearsals and in studio, I'm a very heads up hockey kind of guy. I want the guys always to watch me, because most of the time I don't play the same thing twice. I play, if it's a solo, I'm like, cool, this is entertaining. Okay, cool. Let's stop this here. Let's bring it right back. So leave somebody wanting more. Or, like, I'm always constantly changing it up. So I really wanted the guys in the same room as me. So we laid down the bed tracks. We had the drums. We had the bass. And actually, I was playing through the head of my amp, but it was wired to a 412 Marshall that was in the actual basement of the studio. And I tell you what, man, I had that thing cranked. I could hear it. I could hear it still through the floor. It was awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we had everybody in the studio. Everyone's always making eye contact. And once we laid down the bed tracks, then I came back in, did an overdub of the vocals, overdubbed the guitar solos. And, of course, we tried some new stuff. We're like, okay, cool. Well, you know, we're still working on a couple other songs. Let's just jam some things out. And a couple of cool things that came out of that are some songs that we actually don't have recorded yet, some stuff that we would love to put on the new album, some stuff we're still ironing out, which is just great. But we never fully wrote a song in the studio. I mean, you know, you hear stories of these guys being able to do that, and I'm like, ah, first time with this band, let's just kind of nose to the grindstone. Let's go with mostly figured out. But yeah, man, it was a great time, and it was really something to come in there and to figure it out as you go. Have it mostly figured out, but have a couple of new things that are just on tape. You can take home and iron out for yourself some stuff that I know for a fact will be on the next album.
Okay. Now, you know, being a sound guy, because that's what I am. I'm a sound guy. And I've been one since the mid-70s. So I've worked on a lot of gear. You know, going into the studio, I mean, you're pretty familiar with what's going on. You know your mics, you know your miking techniques, all of that. Did that help you at all, or give you kind of the ability to kind of guide things while you were in the studio?
Oh, yeah, it certainly did. I mean, before going into the studio, actually, I had just graduated from an audio engineering school in London here. It's called OIART, Ontario Institute of Audio Recording Technologies. And I tell you what, everything that I learned as far as being a sound man, I learned it all there. So walking into the studio, I was pretty confident in what I'd want sonically and what I wouldn't want, because I spent the past 11 months just doing nothing but recording stuff, doing some live stuff, doing some AVIS stuff, which is audio and visual media. And I'm like, cool, I got a pretty good idea of where I want the mic on the cone of the speaker to get where I want. Do I want it a little more aggressive? Do I want it a little more mellow? So yeah, it certainly gave me a very big helping hand in going after that sonic sound I was looking for.
Okay. Now, one of the things that impresses me, especially about how the Canadian, the Canadian government, supports independent artists up there, with the FACTA program and things like that. Were you able to take advantage of any of those?
You know, I went into it. I'll be so honest. I went to it all a little bit blind. You know, I didn't familiarize myself with all of that, and so everything that we did was entirely ourselves and out of pocket.
Okay, all right, but you do have that option now that you can.
Have that option. Yeah.
Now let's talk about who plays on it. Give me the lineup on this.
Yeah, so the main band that's on the album is the band that I play with still. It's Glenn Kitchen on the drums and Mark Shakluna on the bass. I myself am doing all of the guitar work, rhythm and lead and the like. I'm doing all the vocals. But I also, on a couple of tunes on February and on the song Wake Up, I have this killer organ player out of the States. He's in Memphis, Jeremy Powell. And I also had a fellow by the name of Justin Brown, who I met when I was playing in January in Memphis. I met him down there. And he also has some organ on Borrowed Time, and he's got some piano parts on that Wake Up tune. And then also I have doing, as a little guest guitar, I have Pat Harrington from Victor Wainwright's band.
Oh, I know Victor well, yeah.
Yeah, I got him doing some guitar work on that blues tune, So Tired. We kind of got a little bit going back and forth, which is pretty fun. And, you know, Pat, I met him during COVID, and he's actually my guitar teacher still today.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Which is awesome. So, yeah. Now, so I got some Pat flavorings in there.
All right. Now, what would you like your fans to take away from this release?
Yeah, it's a pretty honest album. Like everything that the songs are about, there's no BS, there's no filler. Every song is about something that's either happened or is true or whatever. You know, the thing about music is whether it's happy or whether it's sad, it's so great to be able to have that, use it as a vehicle to just get it out there. And you know, this album, it's me. It's very honest. It's, you got your sad songs, you got your happy songs, and you got everything in between, you know? So whenever you grab a copy or you listen to it, you're like, yeah, this actually happened.
Okay.
So it's a real honest portrayal.
Now, once you get it recorded and written, and you got to get it out, of course, to radio and press and create the buzz, and you're working with Larry Kay from Night Train Promotions, tell me a little bit about how that relationship began and how is it going so far?
Yeah, well, Larry's awesome, man. He actually reached out to me originally because I was figuring out, okay, how do I work with SoCan? How do I get this music out here? And I was going through, okay, do I go through Bandcamp? Do I go through Spotify? Let's go through DistroKid and just get everything out at once. And so he heard an early release version of one of my songs, Miss Mary. And that led him to figuring out a couple other tunes, and he got getting a kick out of what I was all about. And so he ended up actually giving me a shout, and he reached out to me, and we started talking, and he was telling me what we could work towards and how that might look. And I thought, you know what, this sounds great. I looked into him a little bit. I looked into who he's worked with, and I was like, hey, this sounds awesome. Oh, you know a couple of guys I know? Great. Let's make something happen. And so, yeah, that's kind of how that came to be. And it's going pretty darn good, I got to say.
Okay. Now, you know, I get into a lot of discussions with musicians about a lot of these hot topics that are in the industry today. One of them has been artificial intelligence. Now, as soon as that subject comes up, usually musicians start to recoil in horror.
Yeah.
You know, I get splashed with holy water. I get the side eye a lot. The first thing out of, you know, the musician's mouth is, I'll never use that.
Of course.
But I think a lot of musicians miss the point.
Yeah.
The first point is, it's here. No matter whether you like it or not, it's here. And it's going
and it's not
to
going
get,
anywhere.
Yeah. And it's going to get more prevalent as we move forward. And if you really look at it and you take away the hype and, you know, what the press is saying and all of that, and you look at it for what it is, you start to realize there is some value there. And what I've seen is that in the music industry, I look at AI in three distinct areas. The first one, of course, is the one that everyone has, you know, basically vilified and has the biggest fear about, is in the creativity end. And, you know, I am old enough to remember some of the technology that made the music industry run around with their hair on fire. When I started in the music industry, using a rhyming dictionary was considered cheating. Because if it didn't come out of your head, it shouldn't be on the paper. That was kind of the mentality. And then, of course, the drum machine came around. Oh, my God. You know, everyone was, music is going to become metronomic, and you're going to, you know, it's going to be all, you know, no more feel, you know, yada, yada. And then when MIDI came in, oh, my God, that was like, you know, the devil incarnate has risen, you know, because producers can go into a studio with no musicians and create a piece of music using a sequencer computer. In fact, it wasn't even a computer back then. It was an actual sequencer unit and a synthesizer. And, you know, and again, those are now tools in every musician's toolkit. It's there.
Yeah.
And I look at AI not as a creativity replacement, but more of a creativity amplifier. In that, like a rhyming dictionary, if I put in to ChatGPT, what rhymes with this? It's going to give me, you know, perfect rhymes, imperfect rhymes. It's going to give me choices that is going to inspire me. I could take a phrase and put it into ChatGPT and say, tell me, you know, how many ways can you say this? And it's going to give me ideas and thoughts and things to do. And so I look at it more as a collaborative effort as opposed to a replacement effort. And that's because if you use it as a tool, it will be a tool. I mean, you can build a house with a hammer, or you can, you know, smack someone over the head with it. it's the same hammer, you know?
100%, yeah.
Now, the second area that I find AI useful, and being a sound guy, this is kind of right up your alley, is in the studio. Now, think about this. In the old days, we used to rent very expensive studios with very expensive, you know, microphones and preamps and all of that. And today, a lot of that has been cloned. You know, Warm Audio makes some great stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, my studio, I've got 8 channels of API preamps. I've got 6 channels of Neve 1073s, and, you know, I got LA-2As and 1176s. So the gear is here. But what we don't have is that back then, they had engineers that designed this stuff that had decades of experience carving out sound and making it right and had developed the recording industry. So using ChatGPT or using AI more or less, like Ozone, Nectar, Neutron, reference EQs, where you can put in a reference track, they give us starting points. You know what I mean?
100%.
If you have a track and you're listening to it, and you know the bass drum is fighting the bass guitar and it's getting muddy, AI can say, here's where you need to scope it out and to make it clear. And it gives you that starting point. So in the studio, it's an efficiency thing. It gives us that decades of experience without having to spend decades to learn it, you know?
100%, yeah.
Now, the last section, which I find the most important, is that AI's biggest strength is the ability of analyzing massive amounts of data and giving us actionable items based on that data. Now, think about this a second. On Spotify right now, there is almost 1,000 years of music. There is not enough lifetimes to listen to all of that music. And that's 1,000 years listening 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It would take you 1,000 years to listen to it all.
And it's adding more by the day.
And adding more by the day, correct. So we as independent artists need a way to cut through the noise, find our fan base, and market our music in such a way that they want to listen to it. And that's AI's biggest power, is right there.
Yeah.
Now, I took a song from one of my artists, and I put it up on a site called Cyanite, CYANITE.AI. And what it does is it analyzes the sonic signature of that music. It gives you a paragraph describing the song. It gives you the meta tags you need to put on the song. It gives you the genre. It gives you a list of artists that are making music like that. Gives you a list of playlists that are playing music like that. It gives you the mood of the song, and it gives you a mood chart of the song, which charts it through verses, choruses, and so forth, of where the mood goes, which is great for sync licensing. Now, I took all that data, and I put it into ChatGPT, and I said, tell me the best kind of content that I need to create, and where do I need to put that content in order for me to find the largest potential fan base for this song. And it spit out a complete marketing plan with every social media site and the type of content that I need to create for that site. and even suggested some of the AI generative video stuff to create music videos that would attract the largest potential fan base for that song. I mean, it was amazing. So that, to me, is its biggest potential in the future of the industry, is in the marketing of music for independent artists. Because, you know, we could create even music videos. You know, you shoot some, you know, established shots with your cell phone, and then go to AI and get your B-roll and start editing that together. What used to cost you thousands now costs pennies to do.
Yeah.
What do you think of that as the potential for AI?
Well, you know, to start off with your first point, I to circle back to like the rhyming dictionary. I have never yet used AI, but I do agree. It's nothing but a tool. You know, there's so many folks coming around saying, oh, well, you know, that's cheating, or you can't do this, or you can't do that, or is it really that creative if all you have to do is say, okay, what rhymes with this or that or whatever? I mean, I've never used AI, but I've been like, well, here's a really great rhyme that I wrote, but there's the end of the word. I can't figure out. I've used a rhyming dictionary before, and you hit it right on the head. I mean, it's really no different if you use it as a tool. Like, there was, I remember seeing this post on Facebook a little while back. There was a group of kids out of either the States or the UK, but basically they made an entire, like, 60s-type rock band at AI, and they were getting listeners, and people were like, when are these guys going on tour? And then when they made the big reveal that it was AI, everyone was like, oh, that's terrible. Well, I mean, don't use AI exactly like that, but clearly... I mean, you shouldn't try to fool people, but clearly there's value to it. I mean, if you want to use it as like a foundation to start off of, or a couple of words here and there, hell yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I've never used it in proper writing, but I do have ChatGPT, and I'm like, and I remember punching in, hey, AI, write a song about this or that. And you look at it, and you say, in what style? Like, if you want like a Stevie Ray Vaughan type song or John Mayer type song, it's like, you know what? Lyric-wise, I can kind of see that. I mean, it's a little corny, a little cliche, but I mean, you know, it knows what people like to hear. It's all it does is go through all the algorithms. It goes through this, that, and the other. It knows what people like.
Right.
And so it's 110% a great tool. I personally haven't utilized it in songwriting yet, and I get both sides of the argument, because I do feel like it's slightly cheating, because I feel like, well, I could probably get there on my own anyways. But it just cuts your time in half, you know? I mean, and like, everyone says there's not enough hours in the day, and I mean, that's 110% right. So, I mean, if you can save yourself a couple of minutes, and again, not write a whole song using AI, but use it to help fill in the gaps.
Well,
you don't have to use it, but it gives you ideas.
Right. Use it as a collaborator.
Use it
as an amplifier for your own creativity. You know, it's the same way with MIDI. I mean, people have utilized MIDI to, you know, create, you know, string parts that they could not afford a string section for. You know, you can't, not everybody can bring an orchestra into a studio, you know, and AI now can do that as well. You know, these are tools for the musician, that if you have a vision in your head, but your pocketbook is not supporting that vision, it gives you the ability of creating. Because AI, and one of the things I learned, it's all about prompt engineering. It's all about telling it exactly what it is that you want and having it help you create that vision in your head. One of the things is in like a music video, and I realized that you can get schlocky little, you know, clips out of AI. But if you treat it like you have a production studio at your fingertips with all of the, you know, the crew that you could possibly want, and you were very specific that I want this kind of lighting, this kind of background, this kind of a vibe, cinematography, I want this to happen, and this to happen, and this to happen, then you are now in control of that creativity, and AI now is only the tool to make it happen.
100%. It's like looking at a miniature model for a building. I mean, it's you lay everything out, and then that's also a great way to test, this idea doesn't work. Oh, great, I didn't spend $1,000 getting a whole production crew out to try this only to figure out it wasn't going to work.
Right.
You know? No, it's an amazing tool. And it's another thing, it's like, man, anytime something new comes out, everyone wants to bang against it. Like, I remember growing up in school. Oh, man, well, you better figure out how to do it in your head. You're never going to have a calculator in your pocket in real life. Everyone walks around with calculators in their pockets. It's on their phone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I in 10, 20 years, people are going to be using AI all the time. Hell, people are using AI all the time now. Like, in 20 years, I can only imagine. You know, it'll be a night and day difference.
I mean, you know, even, you know, my wife, I mean, she's in real estate, and she, you know, she spends, you know, like an hour and a half, 2 hours, you know, writing a description of a house so she can put it on the listing. And, you know, I said, why don't you just list all the things the house has and tell it to create a description that is geared towards the market that you want to attract? And she did that, and it within seconds had a description that she said I would never have thought of creating. And, you know, that's one of the power of AI, that it understands what works.
Yeah.
You know, and it's constantly learning that as it changes.
Well, yeah, the AI has the entire internet at its disposal. Like you said, it knows exactly what works, what doesn't work, and it's, if you give it the prompt and you know what you want, you will get a pretty damn good idea of what you're after, and it'll give it right to you.
Yeah. Now, the other big discussion I get into with artists is, you know, I mean, let's be real. The whole digital revolution caught us with our pants down. The revenue from streaming is not sustainable as a business model for the music industry. We can't continue to go the way we've been going. It actually works against the industry as a whole, in that you cannot create, the way the industry is structured, a music industry middle class. There's no way for someone to choose music as a career path and reasonably expect that they can make a decent living and pay their bills. And we all know that. So, you know, we need to look at the future and see, how can we change this dynamic? And one of the things I've been watching is this whole movement towards a decentralized music industry. Now, to give you an example, let's take streaming, for instance. There are streaming services that have been developed on the blockchain, which is the software technology that cryptocurrency uses to secure itself. Now, one of the big advantages of these streaming services, like Audius.co, Opulus, Emanate, is the fact that it's decentralized. In other words, no company, no board of directors, no person can own that service. It is owned by the artist who put up their content and the fans who pay for the service. So it's a direct artist-fan relationship. And because it's decentralized, they can pay up to 80% of the incoming revenue directly to the artist. So the revenue is much higher than on regular streaming that we know now.
That sounds beautiful.
Oh, it gets better.
Now, oh, but wait, there's more.
Oh, wait, there's more. Let's take, for instance, let's say you wanted to go to the Spotify's main office, bring your accountant, and tell Spotify, hey, I want to audit your books. Make sure I get my 2 cents, you know? And they'll laugh you right out of the office. But with this blockchain streaming, you can go into that block at any time and see how many streams you got, how much money you made, anytime you want. In fact, you can embed that block with a smart contract. Let's say you have a collaborator that you wrote the song with, and say he gets a certain percent, you get a certain percent. As soon as your song is accessed, the smart contract does all the accounting for you and immediately sends a payment to your collaborator and to you. Now,
That's awesome. There's
more. You can now create shares in your song and sell those shares to your fan base. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, your fans, once they get these shares, can buy and sell the shares between themselves. Every time a share is resold, you get a commission off of that resale price. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And again, it can be embedded in the smart contract. All the accounting is done automatically. As soon as your song is accessed, you get paid, your collaborator gets paid, and your investors get paid immediately. Not 90 days later, but right then and there. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that as a potential for the future of the industry?
Well, I think that sounds amazing. I mean, it just totally cuts out the middleman, and mm-hmm. it gives the artist full control over everything, which
right.
is just amazing. You know, if you look at Spotify, I mean, I heard not too long ago, they went from, because they used to pay you for every stream, and you got like 0.00001 or a fraction of a cent per whatever stream. But now it's like if you have anything less than, I think, 100,000 streams or something, you just don't get paid at all.
Well, what they did is they instituted a policy that any track that gets less than 1,000 streams a year will not get any money. Okay?
Oh, I got you. I added a couple too many zeros.
Yeah, but that's okay. But, you know, what the ironic thing is that on Spotify, 81% of the tracks that are on Spotify have less than 1,000 streams. Think about that. They're not paying for 81% of the music that's up there.
That's terrible.
Okay. And then, you know, with this new streaming service, instead of having to deal with a corporation like Spotify, which has a board of directors and stockholders and all these people that are dependent upon a bottom line profit margin, these new services are direct fan-to-artist relationships that does not depend on a profit. The profit goes to the artist, not to a corporation. So now, this could be the beginning of a music industry middle class. Now, there's more to this as well. You can create your own meme coin. Okay? That coin could now give access to your fans to a specialized, like, fan club, and they call them DAOs, which are decentralized autonomous organizations that you control. Okay?
Sure.
And in there, once they get in with their token, okay, They could use their tokens to buy shares in your songs, buy merch, tickets to a show. You can have, let's say, the stems from one of your tracks. They can buy the stems and they can put it in their own little garage band and mix and play with it. You know what I mean? They can get a demo of one of the songs before it was recorded. You know, that you recorded, you know, just your ideas. They can get whatever it is you want. They can vote on what's going to be the next single or what graphic are we going to put on that single. It kind of involves them in the process.
Because, that's amazing.
You know, as recorded music has lost the status of product in the streaming era, the brand became the new product. So here's a way to monetize your brand and to give your fans the ability to attach themselves to it, to feel like they're part of that brand. You know what I mean? And that's what the whole idea behind decentralized music industry is, to create a direct fan-to-artist relationship and a direct revenue stream between them. And this is a way for independent artists to drive the industry instead of being driven by it. What do you think of that as a potential for the future of music?
I think that's really something. You know, the best part about any live show, just from an audience perspective, you know, is when the band involves you, whether you're singing along or whether you're clapping along. And I tell you what, being in a room where everybody sings along, that's a beautiful thing. So when you can do, give the folks a similar feeling, like, hey, we're a part of this, I think that's just amazing. You know, when you get more traffic, getting more people involved, it's more like a family thing. I'm a family guy, you know, and that's so cool when everybody can be a part of something, when, whether it's, like you say, putting what's the next single, or, oh, you want to hear about, you know, this original demo, you want to hear this idea that either turned into something great, or you want to hear this thing that I shelved, but you want to put it in. Oh, cool. And it just gets so much, it gets more involvement, and it's just, that's a beautiful thing when you get more people involved and you get a whole community going. That's just, that's something else, man. That's awesome.
Well, it's, you know, and I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. It's a way of creating this community feeling that you get at a gig when everybody's kind of the fan and they're really enjoying it. And then you take that and translate it into the digital world and give them that same experience with new kinds of ways of monetizing and giving them. I mean, you know, you look at someone like Taylor Swift. I mean, a genius at this. She has created, you know, this whole community around her music and her releases with little Easter eggs and all that. This is the future. You know, you create little hints, you know, but only the people who have tokens get the hints, you know? And, you know, it's kind of, you know, you create a little game out of it, you know?
110%. Who doesn't love games, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, that's especially, like, yeah, when you say folks like Taylor Swift. And, man, geniuses at marketing, geniuses at little Easter eggs, leaving little breadcrumbs and saying, here's how I got here. Oh, you want to hear Taylor's version? Well, this is this. And just stuff along that line. It's just, it's crazy how much you can do nowadays.
Now, one of the big things, you know, that I think is important is, of course, content creation and, you know, social media and getting it, you know, out there. What are the some of the things you're doing with content and social media marketing that's helping you promote this new release?
For sure. Well, you know, social media is the biggest tool. It's the easiest way, biggest thing to use to reach your audience and new people, you know. I've been using it to, you know, announce your gigs and all that stuff. That's basic stuff. But it's also cool to add, you know, here's my release. Okay, cool. Oh, we got a new song coming out. Check this out. Or we got our music video coming out. Check this out. It's just such a great way to get the word out. We got, I'm not sure if you're a big gearhead, but coming up soon, we got this thing called a rig rundown, which a lot of folks want to know, how do I get my tone out of my guitar? And it's just a little session where we rehearse. We're fortunate enough that got a kind of studio set up here. So we got, it's basically playing a couple of songs and then talking about the songs, talking about how I get my tone, how I, what pedals I use, what gauge strings I use, and making it a whole little interactive thing where here's a piece of me, okay, here's the tone, okay, and here's what you get out of it.
Yeah, well, you know, I definitely agree. I am definitely a gearhead. I've been a gearhead for a long time. My mic closet would make you cry. it would bring a tear to your eye. Being another engineer as I am, you know, I'm always curious, what kind of DAW are you using in your little home setup?
Well, you know what, when I went to college, I learned on Pro Tools, and before that, I didn't even know what that was. You know, I just plucked around in GarageBand, which nothing wrong at all with GarageBand, but that's all I knew. And then when I started learning, you can go a lot farther. Oh, here's Pro Tools, here's Ableton, here's Logic. In my day-to-day studio usage, where we rehearse, is Ableton is the biggest one. I think at all the DAWs, Ableton is probably the best for creating music. I would say Pro Tools is the best for editing, but mm-hmm. Ableton is my favorite for creating because it's so easy to just put a beat in there and just try out a couple ideas because there's so many onboard things that you can use and so many things to test out, and I love it. I think it's great.
No, Ableton's a great program. So is, well, you know, Pro Tools for me, I find most people use Pro Tools because they're too lazy to learn something else. you know, because everyone that I've ever, you know, any pro, because I've used Pro Tools, you know, I mean, you can't be an engineer and not know Pro Tools. But everyone I've ever talked to who is a big, you know, that uses it on a regular basis has a love-hate relationship with it. I kind of migrated over to Studio One, which I found to be very intuitive and great editing and creating. So that's where I kind of landed, you know?
I've never had too much experience in Studio One, you know, but I know a lot of guys that use it. I just haven't come across it too much in what I do, but you know, you can say a lot of good things about Pro Tools, you can say some negatives, but you know what, the best part about Pro Tools is you can play, I'm pretty sure you can play Asteroids in Pro Tools. I can't remember what plugin it is, but if you spell Asteroids backwards in the notes, you can play Asteroids in Pro Tools. And I think that's awesome.
I'm impressed that you even know what Asteroids is.
Oh man, we got an old school arcade in town. I've had sore thumbs. I've been in the Hurt Locker. I've done my time.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking with me. And we're going to give everyone out there a double shot from your new release. You guys are going to love this. Just turn it up loud. You know what? Screw those neighbors. We're going to have fun tonight.
Dawn. Well, here's some more, much more when you're far from home. One more night, one last shot, and I'll be back. Well, how long?
They say it's darkest before the dawn, but it's a more, much more when you're far from home. One more night, one last shot, and I'll be back. It's dark and it's a lonely night out on my own. But I'm not afraid of the night it calls me
into what you're
Whether you're an independent artist or a fan that loves them, makingascene.org is the place for you. For the music fan, we bring you in-depth interviews and CD reviews from artists who are on the cutting edge of original music. For the independent artist, we bring you articles on music business, recording techniques, gear reviews, and interviews with industry professionals that give you real-world information to help you negotiate the new realities in the music industry and give you the tools you need to move your career to the next level. We bring you new content every day. MakingAScene.org is the number one resource for the independent artists and the fans that love them. Head on over and become part of the indie revolution.
Gonna rock these shades. Gonna scream my name. make you shout now, honey. I'm gonna make